From Pittsburgh to Harrisburg, Punxsutawney to Reading, this is Lincoln Radio Journal. On this edition, Governor Josh Shapiro has given his annual budget address to a joint session of the Pennsylvania Legislature. We get reaction from State Senate Appropriations Chairman Scott Martin. Artificial intelligence, or AI, has been in the headlines a lot lately. From the Stargate Project to the emergence of DeepSeek, we find out what it all means from Neil Chilson of the Abundance Institute. And Governor Josh Shapiro's annual budget address failed to mention one important interest group, taxpayers. Emily Green from Americans for Prosperity Pennsylvania talks about it on this week's American Radio Journal Commentary. I'm Loman Henry, and welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. We'll get to Senator Scott Martin in just a couple of minutes, but first, news headlines from patownhall.com. The Pennsylvania State Senate has approved legislation designed to prevent a new electricity tax by repealing the state's participation in the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative, or REGI. REGI is a multi-state compact that would increase electricity rates for consumers, cut jobs in the energy sector, and force the closure of more power plants. Former Governor Tom Wolf embroiled the state in the REGI compact, and Governor Josh Shapiro has continued to support the effort. Lawmakers point out that participation in REGI is essentially a carbon tax, and that only the legislature has the power to impose taxes. State Commonwealth Court agreed with lawmakers, but Governor Shapiro has appealed the decision to the state's Supreme Court. Meanwhile, the Wall Street Journal published an editorial highly critical of Governor Josh Shapiro's recently announced electricity initiative. The newspaper said, quote, "In reality, Shapiro pitched an energy plan to fast-track the construction of renewables and a cap-and-trade program that would effectively subsidize them by punishing fossil fuels." The paper noted such a move would lead to the closure of more baseload fossil fuel plants, accelerating the energy shortage that will lead to higher prices and potentially rolling blackouts during periods of peak demand. Voters were clearly energized in last November's presidential election. In Pennsylvania, 71.1% of registered voters cast their ballots. That was an increase of over 1% over 2020 and 7 points higher than in 2016. It is the highest voter turnout since the 82.8% of voters who cast ballots in 1992. As well, voter registration in November of 2024 was at an all-time high. Despite massive losses in last year's elections, the Democratic National Committee has elected a new slate of leaders who tilt even further to the left than the previous leadership. Among those securing spots atop the national party is State Representative Malcolm Kenyatta of Philadelphia. He was elected one of the party's vice chairmen. Kenyatta has compiled a far-left voting record in the State House and has twice run unsuccessfully for statewide office. Read about all things Pennsylvania at patownhall.com. It was fiscal Groundhog Day in the state capitol this past week as Governor Josh Shapiro emerged from his office to once again use his budget address to propose billions of dollars in new state spending. Senate Republicans have termed his proposal unrealistic. To learn more, we turn to State Senator Scott Martin. He represents the 13th State Senate District in Lancaster County and currently serves as Senate Appropriations Committee Chairman. Scott, welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. Scott, the governor's budget address this past week, you and your colleagues had to sit through 90 minutes of Josh Shapiro going on and on. What were the highlights or perhaps lowlights of his address?
One of the big lowlights was I think my back, it was still numb days after the budget address, though I would say that there are a couple things that may be good that we might be able to work with him on, things related to prison closures. We have the capacity and where the numbers are that, you know, we could save close to $1 billion over 5 years if by right sizing. That's certainly a positive. But outside of that, there really wasn't a ton of things that I could point to that did not leave me in astonishment given the fact that it's pretty well known that Pennsylvania is struggling with a significant $4 billion plus structural deficit. And the last thing that we ever would expect is for a governor to turn around knowing that and propose a 7.5% increase on that budget to the tune of about $3.6 billion more in spending. And when you combine that with the fact that he is really intent on wanting to drain down Pennsylvania's rainy day fund and our fund balance, something that we have fought for years to more stabilize the Commonwealth's fiscal position, get bond upgrades to save money in refinancing debt, things of that nature. And we all know that those kind of funds are also one-time funds. They should be used only for emergency purposes, but he wants to keep injecting this into the Commonwealth's budget. I was very astonished by the fact that he just wants to double down on the fact that he wants to grow Pennsylvania's structural deficit. So if you combine that with the fact, the one thing that really stood out to me when you read his budget document, in all my years of ever dealing with budgets, I can say with 100% certainty, I have never seen a budget presented with the inflated and unrealistic revenues and also greatly understated historical spending in the out years. And so he is trying, and it's very evident, to show through, and this might be a shock to you, Loman, through 2028 at least, that he can have a balanced budget, right? That he doesn't need to raise taxes, he can still have all his wonderful spending he wants. But it's fairy tale land. And what we're faced with right now is if we would approve his spending proposal as is, we would legitimately be in this position next year talking about having $0 in our rainy day fund, $0 in our fund balance, and having about a $4.5 billion budget hole, which you and I know only can be closed two ways, massive tax hikes or massive program cuts. And so he's not being very transparent with where his numbers are. Historically, the Independent Fiscal Office or the Senate, we might be off by, you know, a couple hundred million dollars in terms of projections, and then we do updates throughout the years and things level out. Same thing with the administration. Over the next 5 years, he's so overinflated just on baseline revenues, like the sales and use tax, the personal income tax, he's off by about $5.1 billion of revenue that he's added into that equation. And we have not seen that yet. He also took an old playbook page of wanting to implement a tax on adult recreational use marijuana and on Pennsylvania games of skill in wanting to tax them. But here's the interesting point. Not only do neither of these taxes exist, but he legitimately doubled his marijuana revenue number from $700 million to $1.5 billion. He multiplied it by two, and then he took the game of skills revenue, something else that doesn't exist right now, and he multiplied that revenue by five. So he's playing a huge game of smoke and mirrors, and it's to the detriment of reality, and it's to the detriment of Pennsylvania taxpayers. And I even make an argument, it's a detriment to the people who desperately do need services. So very, very disappointed in what was presented to us in this. I was disappointed to have to sit through 90 minutes of that. And it just shows another example as Pennsylvania tries to get to its feet to address some of our economic and demographic decline. It's these kind of policies, whether it's budget, whether it's energy, that are really holding Pennsylvania back. And sad that that's the kind of leader we have right now with Governor Shapiro.
We are talking with State Senator Scott Martin, who represents the 13th State Senate District, that's in Lancaster and Berks County, about the governor's budget address. And Scott, not only is this fiscal folly, but as we look at the fact that he wants to inflate spending, in addition to inflating revenue beyond any realistic expectation, where does he want to spend all this additional money? What's he want to spend it on?
There's a couple key areas, and I'll note a few of them here. First and foremost, The biggest increase is actually in human services funding and is really tied to Medicaid. Medicaid is one of the largest cost drivers in our budget, and it's really because of the things that they allowed to be covered under Medicaid. Take, for instance, one of the biggest things that are going on right now is they're actually allowing weight loss drugs like Ozempic, not necessarily for someone who is, you know, dealing with diabetes or whatnot, but they've been more heavily utilizing that. That's an extremely expensive drug. They also sought approvals from the Biden administration, which hopefully we can get the Trump administration to revoke. They literally want to spend money on allowing 6 months worth of rent. This is through Medicaid, 6 months of rent for people coming out of prison. He wants to pay for things like at-home grocery delivery services for pregnant women, which should be a real offensive to all our moms across Pennsylvania who never got that luxury and worked hard. He also has in there the ability to buy pots and pans and things like that. I mean, this program is so diluted, but that's about $2 billion of his increase. Outside of that, he's also looking to pump up other areas so he can hand out money for economic development. But the other big one is public K-12 education. He wants to increase that by about another $800 million. And when you really look at where Pennsylvania being one of the top states right now providing financial monies for K-12 education, I think we spend on average close to $22,000 per child, one of the nation's best. But what we're seeing is a drastic decline in the number of kids in our education system and graduating from our high schools. We just had the smallest kindergarten class since 1986 that's going to be working its way through. And we have school districts, some of which have lost close to 20% enrollment over the last 4 years, 10% in another school district. So instead of focusing on right-sizing that, he is going full forward with wanting to give pretty much any extra money that's even out there on top of what's been given in the past to our public K-12 system. So those are really the big areas that he's looking to spend so much more money out of Pennsylvanians' pockets.
When you look at education spending here, Scott, as you look back over the last 10 years, if you look back to former Governor Tom Wolf, he increased education spending by hundreds of millions, billions of dollars every year. There was a tremendous amount of so-called COVID relief money that got pumped into public education, a big spending increase last year. When is enough enough?
Right. And when you add to the fact that we have collectively, school districts across Pennsylvania, public school districts are sitting on about $5 billion in reserves. And most importantly, the proficiency outcomes that we are seeing go exactly opposite of the investment that has been made. We continue to we have areas of the state where there's not a single kid in an entire school that's proficient in English or math or science. Yet these are the schools are the ones that are usually crying that they're the most underfunded, where they're already getting the most money per pupil than most other school districts in the state. And those other school districts also get the double gut punch of higher property taxes. So we've come to a real crossing point here after this court decision that says the way we did things was unconstitutional. They didn't say how much money. They didn't make it all about money, as some of those advocates would say. So we've really been pushing to find alternatives for families, many of which are much, much a fraction of the cost, where kids can get out of dangerous environments, historically failing schools, and schools that aren't meeting their needs. And that's been a real push for us, I know, with the Senate Republican caucus. But the bottom line is the numbers of kids that are in the system right now just compounds the fact. You can no longer get away with having hold harmless provisions or whatnot, because it'll really come back. If we need to right size it, and we need to right size it now.
State Senator Scott Martin, he is chairman of the Senate Appropriations Committee, talking about the state budget, the process now underway with Governor Josh Shapiro having delivered a budget address. Senator, if we have listeners who would like to learn more, do you have a website they can go to?
Oh, absolutely. It's SenatorScottMartinPA.com.
State Senator Scott Martin. Scott, thank you for being with us.
Thank you, Loman.
Competition between the United States and China for dominance in emerging artificial intelligence technology ramped up significantly in recent weeks. For details, we turn to Neil Chilson. He is head of artificial intelligence at the Abundance Institute. Neil, welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. Neil, a major announcement took place a little over a week ago at the White House having to do with a project called Stargate, a big move into artificial intelligence. Fill us in on what is the Stargate project.
This project is a joint venture among some of the biggest players in the tech sector. This is a joint announcement between Oracle, which is a big infrastructure provider. They do big data centers and all the computers that people need to run algorithms on. OpenAI, which obviously is the creator of ChatGPT, an AI model, and a whole series of other products that are related to that. And then SoftBank, which is an investing company based in Japan, but one of the largest investment companies in the world. And the announcement that was made at the White House with President Trump, with the three leaders of these organizations, was that they would spend $500 billion of private investment to build out the infrastructure. This is the hardware, the computers, the data centers, the big facilities that are needed to do AI research in the U.S. And this funding is all coming from private sources. This was not a government program, but Trump promised to be helping in a big way, I think is the way he described it, by reducing some of the red tape that's involved in generating energy, for example, that these companies would need to power these large data centers. And some of the initial building is already happening in Texas. The tranche of funds that is going out that's committed right now, I think, is the $100 billion of that $500 billion. But obviously, this is a big project, a big investment with some big players involved.
When we talk about AI here, Neil, a lot of folks hear that term. So as we look at the Stargate project, we're going to talk about some other developments in this space as well. But as we look at all this, what do we really mean? What does it mean to the average consumer?
Artificial intelligence really is a slippery term. So it's no doubt that it's confusing to folks. In a lot of ways, you can call artificial intelligence might be more accurately called advanced computing. The definition of AI basically tends to mean whatever's at the cutting edge. AI research is whatever's at the cutting edge of what we can get computers to do. When I was a kid first getting into computers, cutting edge AI research was getting computers to play chess at a human level. And that was the sort of touchstone of what it meant to have a computer that was artificially intelligent. Today, we have these chatbots, these machine learning models that they do computer programming in a kind of a different way. You dump in a bunch of data and you have the machine learn from that data rather than explicitly programming it with a set of instructions. And then it can learn to replicate patterns that are in that data. And it turns out this is very useful for creating conversations and coherent amounts of text. And so I think for the average person, what this means is that computers are increasingly easy for us to interact with in the language that we interact with other people. And so in conversation language, how much thinking, and I'm putting that in air quotes, is going on behind the scenes is hard to know, really, or what does it even mean for a computer to do that? But what we do know is that they can replicate the patterns of conversation and the patterns of thinking in a way that's quite powerful and quite useful to the average person. There's lots of applications in healthcare, for instance, where we have massive amounts of data and we don't have good ways to understand what that data means. These machine learning algorithms are quite good at pulling out meaning from massive amounts of data and telling us like what might, for example, like what might be triggering certain kinds of cancer, or when I look at an X-ray, like what might be a tumorous cell in this X-ray and what might be a healthy cell.
To many of us, a new name burst upon the scene. Now, folks like you who study this constantly, I'm sure have heard of DeepSeek. It burst on the scene, really roiled the equity markets for a couple of days. Tell us about this player, DeepSeek.
DeepSeek is a Chinese AI company. It was founded by a hedge fund, actually, in China, and it's a relatively new player to the AI market and AI models. And what the reason that they made so much news last week was that they released this new set of models. Colloquially, you could refer to them as R1. That's the primary model. And that model is open weights, which means that anybody can download this and use it. And so, and it turns out that this model is quite good. It performs at the level of some of the top models that are available right now. And it's what's called a reasoning model. I'm putting that again in air quotes, because it has an internal process of thinking that you can see where it's thinking through the problem in a way that we can see. And there's only been a few companies that have produced these types of models. Part of the reason why DeepSeek is such big news is that they did this in a way that was much more efficient than other people have done it in the past. And so they were able to do this using hardware that was older. They still got really good performance. And a lot of this is because they were very creative in how they wrote the software to do this, to create this model. And so I think the markets reacted to that, to this efficient new model that is very powerful, and the fact that it came from China and not from a U.S. company.
Does the fact that it came from China raise any sort of national security concerns? I know we're all concerned about TikTok, which is a lot less complex. Does this also raise concerns there as well?
It raises big picture concerns, I think. It's very important for the U.S. to maintain its lead in the AI space because this is such a powerful tool. And so I think this is going to light a fire under a bunch of the U.S. companies who want to maintain that and government policymakers who are looking for ways to accelerate the U.S. build out of these, both the hardware that we need, the data centers that we need, the energy that we need to stay in this race, as well as the sort of creative minds and the talent that we need to stay in this race. As an open source model, that means anybody can download it. It's easy for researchers to use and modify. But because it was developed in China, it has the cultural restrictions, I'll say, that the Chinese Communist Party imposes on their tech companies. So, for example, if you ask DeepSeek about Tiananmen Square, it refuses to answer.
We have been talking to Neil Chilson, who is head of AI, artificial intelligence policy at the Abundance Institute. And Neil, tell us a bit about the Abundance Institute. Also give us your website, because I'm sure this conversation has probably piqued the interest of a number of folks.
You can learn more about us at abundance.institute. It's a bit of a unusual web address, but it works in any browser. The Abundance Institute is a mission-driven nonprofit that's dedicated to creating the cultural and policy environment that allows emerging technologies to germinate, grow, thrive, and prosper, because we believe that emerging technologies are the primary way to get to widespread human flourishing.
Neil Chilson of the Abundance Institute. Neil, as always, thank you for taking time to be with us.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me on.
Any reference to or concern for Pennsylvania taxpayers was absent from Governor Shapiro's annual budget address. So says Emily Green from Americans for Prosperity Pennsylvania on this Lincoln Radio Journal commentary.
With the start of the new session comes a very important discussion. What will the Pennsylvania governor's vision for the Commonwealth look like, and how will this vision inspire budget negotiations? This week, Governor Shapiro addressed members of both chambers to present his proposal for the forthcoming budget. In his third budget address, Shapiro outlined a plan that comes with a whopping $51.47 billion price tag. You heard that right. In an economy that's recovering from record high inflation, Governor Shapiro is proposing that we spend well outside of our means. In his over 90-minute address, Governor Shapiro doled out proposed tax credits and subsidies galore. He listed special interests by name, leaning into his philosophical bias that throwing taxpayer-funded resources at a problem will ultimately solve for it. Unfortunately, the most prominent interest group, albeit the least represented interest group in Harrisburg, was notably missing from the list of beneficiaries of the governor's proposed budget. In his address, filled with over an hour and a half of rhetoric, The word taxpayers was only used 3 times. This is a shame, as the taxpayers are the ones footing the bill for each of the promises made in the governor's address. While there's been mixed responses to the governor's proposed budget, our tens of thousands of taxpayer activists have a unified opinion on this whopping $51.5 billion plan. We can't continue to tax ourselves out of business, out of jobs, and out of the ability to compete with neighboring states. In his address, Governor Shapiro shared the following sentiment: cutting taxes is important to strengthening our economy. Well, this is certainly a sentiment we agree with, but this calls into question: why is Governor Shapiro still proposing taxes on energy, burdening our Commonwealth's ratepayers? Whether it's the job-killing regional greenhouse gas initiative or the governor's proposed lightning plan, the Shapiro administration continues to beat the drum for cap-and-tax policies that force the fiscal burden associated with such policies to fall on taxpayers. According to experts and business leaders in the state, policies like RGGI could cause energy prices for ratepayers to increase by 30%. Now is not the time to tax our ratepayers. Instead, we should be encouraging energy innovation. However, in his address to the Commonwealth's leaders, Governor Shapiro neglected to address the threat of this tax burden. Pennsylvania is in a structural deficit, meaning that Harrisburg is set to blow through the Commonwealth's rainy day fund and continue to live beyond its means. Over the last 4 years, Pennsylvania families have been hit by record high inflation, forcing taxpayers to make critical trade-offs in their budgets. As we, the people, were forced to make such trade-offs to live within our means, so should Harrisburg. If we keep on this trajectory, we'll never compete with states that have embraced fiscal responsibility. This 7.5% increase in spending from the last year will only set Pennsylvanians back from achieving true economic prosperity. Instead of special interests, Governor Shapiro should embrace the constituency responsible for footing this bill. When taxpayers are at the decision-making table, only then can we achieve peak competitiveness. Join our tens of thousands of fiscal watchdogs across the Commonwealth to work towards economic prosperity. Together, we can ensure that taxpayers are in the driver's seat, working alongside Harrisburg decision makers. Head to AmericansForProsperity.org to take action today and scale your voice for a better Pennsylvania. Again, that is AmericansForProsperity.org. This is Emily Green, State Director with Americans for Prosperity, Pennsylvania.
If you miss hearing Lincoln Radio Journal on your favorite radio station, audio of our complete program is available on our websites, LincolnRadioJournal.com and LincolnInstitute.org. For 30 years, Lincoln Radio Journal has been heard on public affairs-minded radio stations throughout the Commonwealth, including our newest affiliate, WVYC-FM, at York College in York, Pennsylvania. The Lincoln Radio Journal is produced weekly by the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. The Lincoln Institute is completely funded through the generosity of individuals, corporations, and philanthropic foundations, including the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, the Allegheny Foundation of Pittsburgh, and the Houston Foundation of Coatesville, all of whom have helped to underwrite the costs of this program. Lincoln Radio Journal is a trademark of the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. Comments and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Lincoln Institute or of this radio station. From the Lincoln Broadcast Center in Harrisburg, I'm Loman Henry. Thank you for listening to Pennsylvania's most widely broadcast public affairs radio program, Lincoln Radio Journal. Plug into the pulse of Pennsylvania. Thank you.